Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's the Philosopher's Stone podcast with me, Jordan Strauss, and he...
Sam Laboon,
how you doing?
Sam Laboon, how you doing? Oh, that's a good one.
I've been saying that for literally years now. I mean, not every episode, but I used to say that almost every episode, and you're just now appreciating it. Wow. You know, they say a lot of great artists don't get appreciated until they're dead, so that's kind of how this feels right now.
Yeah, this is your Van Gogh moment.
Yeah. My best case scenario is a Van Gogh situation at this point. I'm going to cut off both my ears. Fuck you. Actually, they say that he was drinking absinthe when he did that.
Oh.
And I happen to have a full 2.6 of absinthe in my pantry right now.
Whoa, the good stuff or the weird?
Yeah, the wormwood stuff, 70%. I brought it to a bachelor party trip thinking everybody was going to be interested in getting fucked up on absinthe, and I was the only one that had a drink of it.
Wow.
But I hear the sound of your voice. You're intrigued. You want to get fucked up on absinthe when you get here next week?
Maybe. We'll see. 70% alcohol. That's pretty steep.
Well, you dilute it. You don't take shots. Oh, okay. It actually says on the bottle, do not. Or no, I've read you should never drink it straight because it can actually damage your throat.
That was Van Gogh's big mistake.
Yeah, he was taking shots. He actually thought he was reaching for a Capri Sun, but it was an absinthe pouch.
Absinthe pouch. a bladder of absinthe.
A bladder of absinthe, yeah. I mean, I don't know how... Because I didn't really, I think what I want to try with this absinthe is, because when I took the drink at the bachelor party, I'd already been drinking all day. So apparently, and I have done this once, is that if you drink just absinthe, it feels like a slightly different drunk. Which I remember when I was younger, I drank just absinthe. And I remember feeling hammered, but like somewhat clear-headed still. I don't know if it was the wormwood keeping me straight. But sounds like a plan. Thanks for agreeing to do that with me.
No problem. Happy to happy to agree.
Happy to be forced to agree.
Well, how am I doing? We are in Toronto. It's still in the heat dome. It's like 32, very humid.
The concrete jungle. It's all just radiating off the buildings too, probably, right? You guys are like in a fucking heat sink.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in the city it's going to be a lot hotter. I'm like up high. I'm on like the 15th floor, but the building doesn't really have any air conditioning at all. So it's still pretty hot.
Well, I can tell you, I don't know if you're moving back to Kelowna. That's confirmed.
Yes. That is
confirmed. I need a celebration noise in here. All I got are these kids laughing. that's everybody laughing with joy to hear that news, which is great.
Great.
And maybe once the funds, if we ever accrue any funds, we could start talking about bringing this thing to YouTube, get a video element, the little podcast studio going.
That would be amazing.
I have space in my basement. It's already sound treated. Doesn't smell very good, but that's fine.
Well, you gotta clean up the DBs and all that stuff.
Yeah, there's like a couple DBs in my basement I've been ignoring. Honestly, it's been on my to do list, but I figured if you wait long enough, the grubs will take care of that for you.
Oh man! Speaking of basements, there's a great new serial killer investigation in the works from Long Island.
Oh
yeah, if we have any true crime enthusiasts.
I mean, I listen to true crime every single night because I'm married to a woman.
There you go. You should, she probably knows this case. This is a huge case. Highly.
Did it just pop off? Isn't it weird though that like the entire true crime industry is like licking its chops every time they hear a horrific killing spree?
Well, it's like, it's the same thing, right? With like doctors and the drug companies, they all need bad things to happen so that they can practice their craft. So there is always going to be a money motivation there for profit. The profit motive is always going to make their work, make their motives tainted a little bit, but people got to eat, right?
People got to eat. I mean, I listen to several different true crime podcasts. I think my wife has like 6 on rotation.
Nice.
And definitely there's some of the hosts that are a little bit more tactful with when to inject humor. there's this one, I forget what the podcast is, but the hosts are, they're riffing the whole time. They're joking around, and then it gets to like, then they realize that they're talking about someone's family getting massacred, and then they have to like backtrack. Happens all the time.
Oh man.
And they make so much money off these podcasts.
They do. Yeah, they do. People love true crime.
Yeah.
But this one's good. This is the Long Island serial killer. It's been an ongoing, I bet that they've thought there's like one guy responsible for some bodies found on this remote stretch of beach on Long Island called Gilgo Beach.
Uh-huh.
And they have a very promising suspect, and he's like your classic serial killer. Like he's an, okay, maybe not your classic serial killer, because the real classic serial killers are usually like kind of weirdos.
Yeah, shut-ins, conspiracy theorists, their moms beat them. Fucking Mindhunter. What a hell of a show. I can't believe that got canceled.
Yeah, like they usually are not like high-functioning, but this guy was like an architect, lived in a wealthy neighborhood. But it was like one of those double life things. And he's also like he's like 6'6", huge ogre-like person, freaky face, scary-looking face.
Good. This was good. Netflix is going to fucking eat this up.
Peacock, actually.
Peacock. They do all the true crime now?
Well, that's the, no, they got this one. His daughter sold her rights, I think, to Peacock.
Sometimes sentences that are in the context of modern society make sense, but like my daughter sold the murder rights to Peacock. If you were to hear that sentence, you know, 20 years ago, you'd be like, you did what now?
But I mean, as strange as it sounds, that's what's going on. And now another lawyer is saying the family was in on it as well.
Oh my God. Yeah. This crazy. Is going to be juicy. They need to get 3 seasons out of this. We live in a time where when you realize your family has been victim to a serial killer, there's money signs showing up in your eyes before tears.
Yeah. I mean, that is, you could say money is the root of all evil.
Well, Jesus said that. So I'm not going to claim I'm not going to claim to be as insightful as Jesus.
You know who else said that?
What? That they're as insightful as, or the money thing?
Yeah.
Donald J. Trump, 45th and 47th president of the United States.
Money is the root of all evil, and if this is evil, send me to hell, baby.
No, I think his angle would be, it's the root of all evil. I'll get rid of it for you. I'll take it off your hands. I'll dispose of it safely so it doesn't hurt anyone.
Yeah. There's not Donald Trump, not the Joker, not John Lennon. It was Kondiaronk. Kondiaronk.
No. But you just reminded me of this guy I see on the internet all the time pretending to be an alien now and giving like huge speeches. Have you ever heard of him? Oh, I got him right here on TikTok. Yeah, Bashar. Okay.
Bashar?
I don't want to derail where you're going with this, but his name is Bashar. He's an alien that gets channeled through this middle-aged balding man.
How do you spell that?
Bashar, alien. And
I don't have alien keyboard functions.
Oh, sorry. Well,
anyway, continue.
So this is a man that claims to be being a conduit for an alien being called Bashar speaking through him. And he does these channeling where he's going to channel Bashar, and a huge audiences show up, and they ask this Bashar alien questions about life and the universe. And when he's channeling Bashar, his whole demeanor changes and he closes his eyes and he starts speaking in a different tone and a different accent. and that's when he's channeling. But the funniest thing to me about it is this Bashar alien comes off as such a fucking douchebag.
Oh no.
You got to watch it. Watch Bashar videos, and it's this, you're like, okay, even if this was actually an alien talking through this man, like he's such a arrogant sounding alien that it's like, oh my God. And he always tells people, he like cuts people off in the middle of their questions and stuff. Oh, it's very funny to me.
That's hilarious.
Pretty sure he's being debunked, but that doesn't even matter these days. People don't even care.
Do people ever ask Bashar a question, and then instead of answering, Bashar just goes off on a completely unrelated tangent?
Yeah, all the time. All the time. I will say he does have an answer for fucking everything.
Okay.
I was watching this one. It was this guy who was clearly tripping on drugs was asking the question, and he was like, why do so many people have negative experiences with alien abductions? And then he goes off on this whole tangent about how most alien abductions that we experience on our planet are actually done by what we call the grays, right? The aliens that are just gray with big eyes that you see. And he's like, those are not aliens. Those are humanity. Those are humans from an alternate parallel reality that ruined their planet. And now they're coming in to your planet and mixing their DNA with this humanity's DNA to make hybrids that are more more intelligent or compassionate. And the reason there's so many negative experiences with these abductions is because these grays have lost the ability to realize what negative human emotion are, and they're just collecting DNA by whatever means they think is most efficient. But they're not aliens. They're actually humans. So he went off.
Joe Rogan came up with that.
Wait, Joe Rogan's channeling Bashar too? That's crazy.
No, Joe Rogan came up with that.
Is Bashar. So this guy's channeling Joe Rogan.
That was Joe Rogan's, or maybe Rogan got it from someone else, but he had the idea that we evolve into grays in the future.
Oh, he definitely got that from someone else. I've heard that theory before, but the point is this Bashar, he's got an answer for everything, and he just whips it right out of his asshole. But the most entertaining part is the way this Bashar, its personality is just so unlikable.
You'd think an alien would be a little more fun to talk to, but oh well.
No, this guy makes me never want to meet the aliens.
Well, in a sense, civilizations on Earth, when they collide, it's kind of like aliens meeting each other.
It is. Is this a segue? I am really... Oh, dude, I could spot your segues from a mile away.
This is a hard segue. Kondiaronk. Back to Kondiaronk.
Right. Not an alien?
No. Definitely a Homo sapien.
Okay.
Of Earth. Because maybe Homo sapiens exist on other planets. Bashar?
Would that be possible? Is it just the definition of Homo sapien?
Well, as Russell Crowe recently explained...
Russell Crowe?
Yes. As Mr. Crowe recently explained...
Hero of mine.
Yeah. Well, human history is basically a series of genetic experiments. And humans could be being experimented on other planets as well, as Mr. Crowe explained.
Why the hell was he saying that shit? Was it him and Terrence Howard hanging out?
No, it was GQ. Someone asked him, like, what are you into? What are you doing these days? And he was...
That was his answer.
Yeah.
So what do you got in the works these days? Human beings, human history is just a series of genetic experiments, and I feel that humans exist on other planets that are also being experimented on. Oh, okay. Where can we look out for that?
Yeah. Also, don't watch Gladiator 2.
Yeah, he doesn't like the idea of Gladiator. I'm not a huge fan of the idea of making a Gladiator 2 either.
No, you should let that one lie.
How often do sequels made, you know, I don't know how many years, almost 30 years in the future, top the original?
Guess what? Maximus's son wasn't dead. He was under a bale of hay in the barn or something.
Then whose body was swinging there, Sam? You see both feet, pairs of feet.
Yeah, good point.
But I like where you're going with that. I like where you're going with that. Somehow he came back. Somehow. That was That was the that was literally the all the explanation they gave in the Star Wars, the third Star Wars that came out of the new trilogy, when the Emperor comes back. That's all they say is somehow Darth Sidious came back.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Okay. Back to Kandiyarank. Said that name multiple times now. People are probably wondering, what is Kandiyarank?
Go ahead.
Okay, well, this Kandiyarank was a Native American of the Wendat tribe, I guess. And they lived in the Great Lakes region. So like Michigan area, kind of, I think.
Yeah.
Ontario.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not far from where you reside currently.
Yeah, not far from where I reside. And Kandiyarank was one of the people that was able to actually go from North America and visit Europe in the 16, 1700s.
Wow. He was a Native American that visited Europe.
Yeah. Toured through France, met lots of important French people and whatnot.
Wow.
Yeah, very interesting, right? So there was a, and he, or the person he was touring with, like this, I guess, a French military officer, wrote down a lot of what Kandiyarank thought about French society.
Oh, interesting. And what level of civilization was Kandiyarank's tribe at this time?
Well, that's an interesting question. What level of civilization?
Yeah.
What do you mean by levels?
I mean, just technological, basically. Like, was it, you know, did they have industry? Was there industry, but like how large was his tribe? Were they living in grass hut situations still, or were they kind of building town? Like, I don't know. I'm very ignorant.
Well, they would live in like a fortified town with like a wooden wall kind of thing.
Right.
And then they would have farming, like some pretty basic farming. And then the men would go off and do the hunting and the gathering and whatnot. And then there would be trade with other tribes and bartering and stuff like that.
Okay. So they weren't delving into science yet, but they definitely weren't uncontacted.
No, they were like, they existed within the network of Native American tribes.
Okay. I think I got the picture here.
Yeah. And it's very interesting that Kandiyarank's, one of his main observations was generally he thought the French were less civilized than the Wendat. And he thought their society was basically extremely miserable, and that the root problem of French society was money, which the Wendat did not produce.
Interesting. That's very insightful.
Yeah, it is very interesting. And there may be some, and before we get into all that stuff, he seems to have had a bit of a point, because famously, whenever like European settlers would be forced to live with indigenous people for some reason, maybe they got captured or there's like a disaster or whatever, they would never want to go back to European civilization.
It's just the Avatar story, you know?
Yeah. Like even kids wouldn't want to go back to their parents if they spent like a few years living with the indigenous people.
And
the primary reasons for that were that they would say was that in the indigenous society, they had way more personal freedom, and their lives were just a lot more easy and enjoyable than European.
You think it would be a more brutal lifestyle, you know, with the luxuries of modern civilization back then, anyways, right? By then, France probably had sewage systems and do they have vehicles? Mm. What's the year again?
Well, that's the crazy thing. This is like the 16, 1700s, 1800s, pre-industrial revolution.
Okay.
So while it's true that the Europeans have like way more advanced technology in like metallurgy, shipbuilding, gunpowder, it's not like they have like computers and cars and
Well, thing. Yeah.
And medicine and stuff like that.
So did that ever happen the other way? Do you wonder if any of the Native Americans got brought over to Europe and were like, I don't want to go back? Or is that a much more rare occurrence?
No, they've all basically hated it. They all thought it was the absolute worst.
Well, I mean, we are talking about France here, right?
pre-enlightenment Europe.
Right.
It's a very different world than the world we live in today. We're pre-enlightenment Europe. You would have way less freedom than you would today to do anything.
And then I'm guessing there was very like oppressive religious state at that point.
Oh yeah. Very oppressive religious state. One thing the Wendat thought was crazy was just like how, all the, people like can't, do anything outside of particular stations. Like you are in these hierarchies.
Uh-huh.
With other people who you are subordinate to and who have more wealth than you. And they thought that is just like absolutely ridiculous. Like, how could you tolerate having a king who has all the wealth and the power? Like, that makes no sense to them.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's something that population size has a lot to do with the necessity for hierarchies, right?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure about that, but that is one of the, there were hierarchies in the Wendat, like they would have like a chief and whatnot, and they had, laws and whatnot, but it was a very different kind of system. And you might be right that, it is easier to work that system when you have way less people.
Yeah. 'Cause I think, you know, there has to be some sort of hierarchy, maybe not hierarchy, but like a very strict set of laws. When you get a certain amount of people all living in one area, can devolve into chaos if you don't have a little bit more of a iron fist, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it is an interesting thing. Like could like a Wendat system work for like a billion people? Well, maybe if they're all organized into smaller tribes and stuff like that, But it was an interesting point you raised earlier as well about science and how they hadn't gotten into science, or at least not to the extent that the French had with like the French technological developments.
Right.
But the Wendat, I guess their position on like science and technology was that these are an outcome of maybe an interesting outcome, but it's like it's a perverse outcome from this system.
Right.
And the real like point of society should be to make sure that everybody has enough to like eat and that kind of thing.
Ideally. Yeah.
And if your society, you know, you could have the best technology in the world, but if the consequence of that system is that you have people who don't have enough to eat, then they would say, well, what's the point of all of your science? You have a terrible system here.
Well, I can say I agree with that point. If the goal of science is to better humanity, then why do we have so much science and so much suffering still? The spoils of science go to the wealthy. That's, well, for initially anyways.
Yeah, exactly. But it's an interesting point because the French philosopher Rousseau sort of took these ideas and ran with them. If you remember, we talked about him and he wrote an essay, and the essay question was, have improvements in science and like technology improved the moral condition of people? Are we better off because of these advances? And his answer was no, because there's still tons of suffering and nothing is done to change that.
Now that goes back. Now this is a question for today, modern day. Is there more suffering overall now than there was pre-scientific revolution, right? Like before the digital age and the industrial age, overall, I feel like there's probably less suffering in the world now, or that might just be because I don't have much suffering. And I'm not surrounded by suffering that I get that type of viewpoint. But I feel like there's less overall needless death nowadays than there was back in those days. That's my gut feeling.
It could be. People definitely live longer. That's for sure. With
a lot less things that could kill you, like simple diseases and infections back then, don't typically lead to death nowadays.
Also true.
We don't have to think too much about the risk of physical violence, at least not in our country. I think in most of Western civilization, like, the prospect of being assaulted with violence is like a rarity. You'd think it's probably unlikely going to happen to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas I think at certain points in time in Europe and back in the day, you would have to be like on your guard all the time.
Yeah, maybe.
But I don't know. I get all my information from TV and movies. So.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting question, right? Like, and that is kind of the question. I'm getting this from this book. It's called The Dawn of Everything. It's very good. But that is like an interesting question, right? Because the Wendat system, like, you could have had that system of like social organization with like basically Stone Age level technology.
Right.
And you've got, and so the question is, does living with Stone Age technology automatically mean that you are living in a Hobbesian, nasty, brutish, and short existence? That's the question.
Well, a lot of the, if you're going by life's like average lifespans, a lot of that information is like the average lifespan number is skewed back in those days simply because of infant mortality rates, which would contribute to suffering. So kind of a moot point there.
Yeah. There's definitely like, people did not live as long back then, probably as they do today. But I don't think it is true that everyone was dying at like 33 years old.
No, I think that's a misinterpretation of the data.
Yeah. But the point is that we have this idea that like society progresses in these levels, where first we're just sort of like wandering around the woods, getting whatever we can pick up off the ground. And then we get farming, and then we get cities, and then industry, and then here we are.
Right.
And that's progress. But
yeah.
But the question is, okay, well, now we have this clash, right, where the European civilization with its like proto-industry and its farming and its technology meets a Stone Age level civilization. And the Stone Age level people civilization do not seem to think that they are suffering a lot more than the technologically advanced civilization. And in fact, the people who go from the technologically advanced civilization to the Stone Age civilization don't want to go back to the technological civilization.
I think some of that comes down to the simplicity of life, because technology, although it does make certain things easier, it definitely makes society a lot more complicated. It does not simplify your life, unfortunately. It just makes you more efficient at doing more things. But simplifying your life, that could be, maybe humans aren't really intelligent design. I'm fully Christian again. Maybe God didn't make humans with the intent that they had so many different things going on in their lives, right? Like, if you look at anyone today, we have, you know, everybody's got like 10 plates spinning in the air because of all this technology, like social media, your job, your home life. And then there's like bills, and there's politics, and there's all the complications with the internet. You got about 1,000 apps on your phone. You have a few credit lines. You got all this shit going on, right? Like, there's a lot to manage day to day. in modern society, whereas back then maybe the simplicity of life allowed for an overall less stressful existence.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. That's like one of the things that was appealing to people about it, is your life is just a lot easier when you get outside of that Puritan colonial life, where you're always taking orders to go do this and do that. And
yeah, industry. It's like, you know, you need food, shelter, community, and water basically to survive as a human being. And I get all three of those satisfied immediately upon waking up, and yet I'm still busy as hell and feeling stressed out about stuff that has no real physical implications. It's all made up, kind of, you know, if you don't pay your bills on time, all the stuff that happens to you is not taking place in physical reality. It's all in these systems that have been set up to help manage society. But it's complicated. Everything's been so complicated. That to me would be like my, when I think of the people that didn't want to come back after living with the native tribes, that to me would probably be the main deterrent, is you got to go back to all this extra bullshit. All this extra complicated stuff that is now that you were able to unburden yourself with when you were living amongst the tribe, because it probably came down to simple, you know, hunting, gathering, and then hanging out.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so that's a big part of it. Very interesting. There's another thing that was different as well, and that is their sort of legal system was different. And with their system, they would not necessarily punish the person who did the crime, but rather they would do a collective punishment to that person's entire family.
Ah.
Yeah.
I can't say I'm a fan of that.
Well, that's the thing, right? It seems really weird. And they, so that's what they do. Then the family has to pay restitution. So if you did something wrong, you wouldn't get punished, but your family would have to pay.
You wouldn't get punished at all?
Well, I mean, there is no like law that says you will be punished. The law would be your family has to pay restitution, but you could imagine that after the restitution is paid behind closed doors, there's another punishment waiting.
Imagine if you just hated your family and you just would run amok and you wouldn't take, hell yeah, whatever do you want to do to them?
Loophole.
I happen to despise my family, so I have the best life.
Yeah. Apparently it worked. It was their system. Apparently it worked. Apparently it worked better than the French system of directly punishing people. I guess the shame was a bigger punishment.
Yeah.
The communal shame.
I mean, that would definitely, I feel like, add a sense of deterrence if it was like, hey, if you're caught shoplifting, then your mom gets punched in the face.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was the last? There's one more really interesting thing. Oh yeah, this was another interesting thing. And this is probably related to what you said about there being smaller numbers of people in these communities. But people felt like they were more cared for and valued by the people around them that they saw every day. They felt like there was more of a genuine care between people in these communities than there had been in the European communities that they came from.
Yeah, probably because the European communities were more of a, you know, get what you can for you and your family and fuck everyone else, right?
Yeah, pretty much exactly. And so we're back to money and private property as being the cause of these problems.
Ooh, this is turning into a communism podcast, isn't it, Sam?
Well, not necessarily.
Okay.
Because, like, I think... I don't know if they're right about that's like just their thesis that money has caused money. Well, that's like what Rousseau, we did a podcast on Rousseau a while ago, and Rousseau's take was that money and property are the cause of all of is the reason why there is so much inequality in society.
Yeah.
Is because of money and property, because some people will just wind up with more than other people, and that creates there's your inequality. I guess it remains to be seen. Like, I haven't finished this book yet, so I don't know what their overall thesis is, but
what's it called? Many Dawns, All the Dawns. Dawn Dish Soap.
Dawn Dish Soap. Yep. The Dawn of Everything.
All posts. Okay. It's good. You can use it to get oil off the back of a duckling. That's my favorite part about Dawn Dish Soap.
Is that their ad?
I think it was their ad for a while.
Oh, Jesus. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Rousseau thought property causes all these problems. And basically, I don't know. It's a really simple solution to all of humanity's problems is to say it's this one thing. So that's what makes me kind of skeptical.
Yeah. I think the problem here is, again, I think a lot of this has to do with population sizes living amongst each other. Like, huge cities need to have a system in place. They can't just be, everybody can't be out there hunting and gathering, right? When you start getting like many, many, many people living together. So like, obviously agriculture will be the solution to feeding a large group of people. And then what do you do? Trade will just eventually evolve into some sort of, there will be some currency that develops, right? Because money, the concept of money that developed in independent societies independently of actually knowing each other, right, through history. I can only imagine. It's not like one country invented money and then everybody's like, that's a great idea. I think it's like it's a natural solution to a problem that arises when you get a bunch of trade happening between a lot of people, individuals.
Yeah, I think money was developed in what is now Turkey and China. Yeah.
Independent of each other.
Independently.
Yeah. So I think that's one of the problems is that we could solve a lot of our issues if we all just spread out more, you know? Why do we all have to be in one hub?
Yeah. I think the money, at least the money back then was made of gold and silver. So it was a little different from money today.
Yes. But it was better than having to lug goods around everywhere and trading. Or having to
probably.
If everybody could meet at a market with their goods, and then you have this small object that is representation of value, then that's a lot more efficient than, you know, trading actual physical goods on a large scale between a bunch of individuals, right? If it's like one big entity that's trading a lot of it of materials with another big entity, then yeah, that makes sense. Just trade a straight across trade between resources, but when you have individual commerce taking place, I can't see much another system that would work as well as some sort of currency.
Yeah, it definitely makes economics a lot better. I don't know. It's a tough one.
I just can't wait till all of our bank accounts are downloaded into our brains, and then all you have to do is I guess it's already that. We're basically there already. I was just about to say, you just touch your arm to something and that's your currency goes down. What was that movie with Justin Timberlake, rest in peace, where they could trade time, like time of being alive? Or maybe I'm misremembering how that movie went. But like,
oh yeah, yeah, I know
that. Basically, your currency was your lifespan. So you'd buy stuff with minutes and seconds and hours. Right. So if you wanted to make a big purchase, you could just sacrifice like a whole year of your life.
Yes. I do remember that movie. That's like Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about money. Time. You, time, you could, time is money, I guess. Yeah.
I guess they took that to the extreme. But you, that would allow anyone to live like an absolute baller for 30 years and then die. And if you're real frugal and you have a lot of resources to sell, you could live for a very long time.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Would you rather live very frugally for hundreds of years or just have a great decade?
I want something in between, really, is what I want. The idea, I really don't think that there is, I don't think people would enjoy being alive longer than like 150 years max. Like, I just don't think we're built to live that long. I think that the average lifespan of like, I think 100 years on this planet is like about how far I'm willing to go. Even if I had a healthy body, I don't know. I feel like after 100 years, you're kind of like, all right, I'm over this.
Yeah, I think like vampires, right? Because they always look young. So they, life just gets better and better for them the older they get. Because
does it? Because most vampires I've encountered in TV or movies are kind of miserable characters.
Well, that is true. There are a lot of miserable people in the world. They get more miserable the older they get. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think that there's like, after you get,
but if you look young and hot and you can like seduce anybody and turn into a cat,
I think you'd be bored of sex by 100, even if you were still like,
well, yeah. I mean, you'd be into, you'd have
you'd
other
into some
things.
Crazy shit.
Yeah. You'd be, there's a Sandman. There's a Sandman thing about this. But a guy who lives forever.
A Sandman thing? Or that's a TV
Neil,
show?
Neil Gaiman, The Sandman.
Ah.
The most important thing for someone who lives forever is to find a friend who also lives forever.
Right. But how, I mean, I can't imagine friendships being like at a certain point.
Well, you just
literally
meet every,
know everything about that person.
Well, you just meet every 100 years and check back in.
Ah. So what are you doing in the meantime?
Do your random adventure shit.
Well, how many adventures are going to still be fun after 100 years?
The world's a big place. It's always changing.
Well,
there's always new things.
I just think that there's you would get to a point where like new experiences are just not even appealing to you.
Yeah, could be. Could be. Could be.
150 years. I think that would be the mean, the average time to offing yourself if they just came up with a pill. 150 years, I think that's when people would be like, all right, well, I'm a head out.
That's when you do the maid system mutually. Yeah, maid.
Yeah, exactly. Because I can't imagine any scenario where eternal life is a good thing. That sounds like torture no matter what way you cut it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like a fundamental thing. I would be like, okay, I would like to not die so that I can just see what happens next. But I want to stay young. I don't want to get older. That's the thing.
I guess it would come down entirely to how long can you have a high quality of life, emotionally speaking.
Yeah. Like there's this billionaire who is like on social media and stuff promoting living longer. And I think he does like blood transfusions with his son or something.
I just steal my son's blood.
The crazy thing is that works. Like, that actually works.
I know. It's legit vampire shit.
Yeah.
On the show, have you seen Silicon Valley? It's like they always make a mockery of billionaires. There's one guy that just pays this 20-year-old to hang out with him, and he just steals his blood.
That's real. That is so real. Oh my god.
He's just I gotta get a new blood bag.
Blood boy. Blood boy.
Yeah.
Gotta get a new blood boy. Oh my god. Yeah, I don't think the technology is there yet. Like we're living longer, but we're getting new ailments as we get older.
Mm-hmm.
Like Alzheimer's, dementia are like newer diseases because people didn't live long enough to get them before, right? That's
or maybe they just didn't realize that's what they were dealing with, until it was, you know, a sorted out diagnosis. The only way I could see maybe for myself wanting to live longer than 150 years is if I could travel to other civilizations in the universe. Otherwise, you're just going to get bored. I don't care how fast technology expands or accelerates and new and exciting video games come out. It's basically, that's what we got going for us is faster cars and better video games. But outside of that, I don't know what kind of level of entertainment or life satisfaction technology advancing is going to offer someone who's been alive for 150 years.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a steep, you're going to have to live a really long time, most likely, if you want to travel around the universe.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Is that you're going to get sick of humanity itself. That's going to be the problem if you live that long. But if you could go to a different, whole different, and live amongst the aliens, basically what we're talking about, but on a larger scale.
Well, this is the entire premise of a Sandman episode. And he has a totally different argument from what you're saying.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, the Sandman, right, lives forever because he's like a deity kind of thing.
Yeah.
But he is a misanthrope, has no friends, and doesn't consider humans to be worth that much time because they're just boring old humans who live and die all the time.
Yeah.
But then he meets this guy in a tavern, and the guy in the tavern is saying that he never wants to die. Like, he would want to live forever if he could.
Right.
And the Sandman is like, oh, you think you'd enjoy this? Mm-hmm. And so he's like, secretly makes it so the guy doesn't die. And then I forget how it works, but there's like some deal where they go back to this tavern every 100 years or so. Maybe not even on purpose, but the Sandman sort of observes this guy as the centuries pass.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going through, his life is like a roller coaster where he wins it all and then he loses it all, and this crazy life. And
but I feel like that kind of life is only like the ambition. Your ambition has got to run out once you've experienced all the highs and all the lows that you could possibly experience.
At some point,
you just got to be, you're just going to become basically a ghost like the Sandman.
Well, that's what the Sandman says. He's like, hey, like I can turn this off for you, like, if you want. And the guy's like, are you kidding me? Like, I've got this next thing I want to do. And the Sandman thinks like, oh, you're an idiot, blah, blah, blah. And they split up. The Sandman vows never to see him again, that kind of thing. But eventually they do meet again, and the Sandman has to admit that he's glad this guy doesn't want to die because now he has maybe a friend.
Maybe a human friend.
A human friend.
A human friend. I'm still not convinced that any level of new experience, like your new experiences themselves, are going to lose their effect on you after, you know, 150 years. That's my number.
All right. Well, there you go.
Maybe not 100. Maybe okay. Maybe let's bump that number up. We're going to go to 300 years. 300 years, you're going to start being unsurprised or unimpressed by new technology. You're going to have all of your relationships will be, basically, I believe that your relationships are going to get stagnant after a few hundred years. Like, there's not that much more personal growth going on amongst your friend group at 300 years, right? You could still love the hell out of them, but like, you probably would be fine not seeing them for 50 years at a time after a certain point. Society is probably going to change a lot, but you've seen already so much change that it's not going to be like this exciting new thing when big changes happen in society. You're going to become so apathetic towards humanity in general and existing in general after a certain point that the only logical next step is to end it.
Damn. Now, would you say that's a pessimistic outlook on life or an optimistic outlook on life?
I view it as an optimistic outlook because I think that you get, if you live to old age, that is about as natural and as if you die at, say, in your 90s or whatever, I think that you basically have lived the exact amount of time that you should live. You know what I mean? Like the fruit is ripe and it gets plucked at the right moment instead of rotting on the vine.
Whoa. I don't know. Rotting on the vine, that sounds pessimistic to me.
Well, that's only if we actually live that long. We don't rot on the vine. No one lives long enough to rot on the vine. I mean, some people probably get pretty pessimistic earlier in life, but that's circumstantial. I think that if you were granted eternal life or an extended, indefinite amount of time, there will become a point where you can no longer find joy in anything. Because it's just, I think novelty plays a huge role in joy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, all right. I would agree with you to the extent that I would like to live forever, but I want to have the option.
Well, yeah. I'm telling you, you would take that option a lot earlier than you think.
Wow.
That's what I think.
And I would like to think that I wouldn't.
What would you do? Okay, what would you think? What do you think would be your upper limit a bit before you pull the plug?
Man, I don't know. If I was like totally alone, that would
No. I'm saying everybody you know can live as long as they want.
Oh. What would make me pull the plug?
What do you think? How long do you think you would want to stay alive for?
Like probably quite a while. I'm just very curious to see where all this is going.
What do you mean? Oh, where the humanity?
Yeah, I want to.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to keep going the way it's going. You can extrapolate in your head. We'll probably start exploring our solar system quite in depth in the next 100 years, but that's not going to be exciting forever.
But if I live forever, I could become smart enough and experienced enough that I could be directly involved in that.
And I'm telling you that will lose its novelty eventually as well.
Yeah, but then you're on to the next endeavor. On to the next port, mateys.
I'm telling you, you're going to hit a point where you're like, I don't even want to know what's going to happen next. A lot sooner than you might think.
Perhaps.
And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing. That makes death less scary to me, is that you can get to a point where I don't want to live forever. I know that's a fact. I do not want to live it forever. So that to me means that the only end of my existence that I want to happen is death. I don't want to be sitting around waiting for shit to happen and also the importance of events in your life are going to totally start diminishing. Like, that's what I'm saying. I think you would be overcome with a sense of apathy about everything just because you've seen it all and you've done it all after a while.
Yep. No. I totally hear you. I think this is just like, I don't think either of us will agree because I want to say like, no. I'll like it longer than you say.
You think you would enjoy life longer than me, you bitch?
Yeah. I think so.
Wow.
Okay, maybe now, not. Though.
That's insulting.
I might just be too curious. Like, even if I'm not enjoying it, I might just be too curious that I'd be willing to put up with the nonsense for longer. Just in case.
Yeah. I think everybody would be overcome with apathy and depression by 150. That's my thesis.
All right. Well, there we go. There you go. That's the thesis.
Unless somehow humanity evolves to age slower. As in ages 1 to 20 takes 100 years, then I think it would be a bit, I could go for a lot longer just because you're, but that would mean your maturity level also is stunted. So you're really, really like immature for 100 years. Like the wisdom you gain is also not, that will also slow down. And then, you know, but then it all feel the same anyways.
Maybe if you lived long enough, you would see everything go full circle and we'd be living like the Wendat.
Well, I mean, that's basically the story in Time Machine, right? I mean, it doesn't go back, but it goes like, he goes from like his age or whatever. I forget where that story originated, like when it actually starts off, but then he goes way into the future and then humanity destroys itself. And then it comes back out as a kind of more primitive society. And I think that you could, I mean, I don't think people would want to see two cycles of that. I just think boredom would play a huge role after a while. You'd be like, all right, let's speed this up. I want to see what the next phase of civilization is. I've already seen 35 phases. I want to see the next one. And but then you're like, oh, probably got to wait another 100 years before I can see the next phase of civilization. Well, I'm not doing that. Bye.
Or you can become a pirate or something, you know. That could be fun.
That could be. I'm sure it would be fun for a time.
Oh man.
Yeah, I think your life would lose so much meaning if you started living like 500 years, 1,000 years.
Or you make more meaning every year.
I don't think that would happen. You would forget about kids you had after a while. Oh, yeah, I had a kid when I was 30. Oh, I wonder what happened to them.
Okay, go watch The Sandman. Or if you have the graphic novel, read the graphic novel. Let me find the episode for you. Sandman, Netflix.
This is a relatively recent series, right?
Yes. Immortal episode. Where is it? Fuck. Okay, I'll give this to you later.
Okay. Well, if any of you want to chime in on this, I guess you could just direct message me on Instagram or something. Or I know lots of you know me personally. Just shoot me a text if you want to chime in on this conversation. We'll talk about it next episode.
Okay, hold on. I got it. Okay,
all right.
He's in the Netflix drama series, The Sandman. Men of Good Fortune, I think, would be the episode.
Okay.
Yeah. Check that out. And then come back to me and tell me you don't want to live forever.
Okay. I just recall that song from Queen, Who Wants to Live Forever? I challenge you to watch Highlander, okay? Then you tell me who wants to live forever and hear every human's thoughts or whatever the power they get at the end was.
Sounds... Highlander? Lame.
You've never seen Highlander?
No. Episode six. Sean Connery, yeah.
Do you know what it's about?
Two Scottish guys, only one of them can live.
Basically, there can only be one Highlander, but the Highlanders are all, there's a bunch of people that are living forever hunting each other down because there can only be one, and those people all live throughout long periods of time. And I think they touch on some of this, the dilemma of being an eternal being. Anyways,
why don't they just not fight each other?
Because they want to get this certain power that they attain when there is truly only one of them left. And the only way you can kill one of these Highlanders is by cutting off their heads.
Well, I mean, then the problem isn't that they live forever. The problem is that they all have this obsession with acquiring this glory. That's the real problem. That's why they're not happy.
I forget.
If they were enjoying living forever, then it wouldn't be a problem.
Well, that's the crux of it. Can you enjoy living forever? I don't think you can.
No. Can. Episode six.
Okay. I will watch it.
Yes.
That's our episode. Bye.
See ya.